In this week's market update, inflation is top of mind, Chinese growth stalls, earnings season is in full flow, COP26 approaches, and investors get ready for Bitcoin ETFs. Well, there's no doubt about the big story in markets this week, inflation. Last week we had data out of the US, this week it's the UK's turn. Over here, Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey has made it clear in a speech to G30 central bankers that the UK central bank is close to ending the emergency interest rate of 0.1%. The December meeting of the bank looks like the most likely date for liftoff. Bailey stuck to his long-held view that the rise in inflation would be temporary, but he said that he thought price rises would persist well into next year. He blamed rising energy prices for the continuation of inflationary pressures. Supply chain issues and a tight labour market are also contributory factors. The governor's comments have triggered a major change in market expectations. Only a few weeks ago, markets were pricing in a first rate hike next summer. November is unlikely because the bank will most likely want to see evidence of the impact of the ending of the furlough scheme, but December now looks nailed on. The latest UK inflation figures will be issued on Wednesday. The consensus is for the August rate of 3.2% to be repeated in September before heading up to 4% towards the end of the year. If rates do start to rise this year, there'll be many repercussions, not least in the mortgage market, where the incentive to grab today's cheap fixed rate mortgages is likely to increase. Bailey's comments confirm a similar picture from the US last week. The headline from the US figures was that the slowdown in core inflation in July and August reversed in September. Strip out falling airfares and the underlying picture looks a bit stickier than we'd hoped. The rise in prices is not just about recovery from the pandemic, there's something more structural going on. Taking a two-year view of inflation, which should even out those transitory elements, the trend is back on an upward trajectory. In fact, core inflation is now back above the level it briefly reached in 2000 and again just before the financial crisis. On this basis, inflation is at a 25-year high. A more optimistic reading is that on both of those occasions, inflation fell back after reaching this kind of level, although the circumstances, the bursting of the dot-com bubble, the financial crisis, are not exactly what we would hope for today. What was the market reaction to last week's US data? Not exactly what you might have expected. Rising inflation expectations would normally translate into rising nominal bond yields. In fact, they fell at first and ended the week unchanged. Real yields, the gap between nominal yields and expected inflation, went a bit more negative to minus 1%. So what does that mean? Well, it says that investors are worried about growth, that the kind of inflation we're seeing is a consequence of rising energy costs and higher wages, bad for growth, and not a response to rising demand and activity. In other words, stagflation. That's not a universally held view, though. The jobs data in the US is telling us a slightly different story. The number of unemployed per available job is back at its pre-pandemic level, and workers are quitting their jobs in record numbers. They wouldn't do that if they were not confident of finding a new one at better pay. So this feels less like stagflation than a real inflationary boom. The history books are interesting here. Something similar happened after the Spanish flu outbreak after the First World War and again after World War II. The trajectory of commodity prices is similar in all three episodes, for example. Over in China, the story is also about both inflation and growth. But today, the focus has been more on growth, or the lack of it. China's economy grew in the third quarter by 4.9%, its slowest rate in a year. Quarter on quarter, the growth rate was just 0.2% as a property slowdown and energy shortages hit activity. The figures underscore the tightrope that President Xi Jinping is walking as he attempts to push through a common prosperity strategy to distribute wealth more evenly after 40 years of tolerating unbridled capitalism. The property sector is a key target for the government, alongside education and healthcare, all three areas of the economy with a big impact on ordinary households. Property, in particular, has been a key driver of economic growth in China, but it's also fueled spiraling debts. Measures to rein in the property sector make sense from a long-term financial stability perspective, but as the latest GDP figures show, they come with a significant risk to growth too. The inflation angle in China is, as in the West, energy-related. Shortages have led to power rationing across the country, and that in turn has pushed factory gate inflation to its highest level since the mid-1990s. There's an unfortunate climate angle too. Faced with energy shortages, the government has been obliged to increase coal production despite its pledges to reduce carbon emissions. Inflation and growth will certainly be key topics during the unfolding earnings season, which got underway last week with a set of strong bank sector results announcements. The big US banks have benefited from an upsurge in M&A activity and buoyant markets over the past 18 months. Elsewhere, attention will focus on whether the long-standing rise in profit margins can continue in an environment of less growth and more inflation. The bar has been set high for the third quarter earnings season by the last 2 3-month periods in which expectations started high and got progressively higher as results emerged. This quarter, forecasts are for earnings to rise by about 30% on average. That's slower than in the first and second quarters, but still more than respectable. So the problem is not the level of earnings or even the growth in them, but the fact that after annualized gains of 54% and 96% in the two previous quarters, the pace is slowing. This is normal. In a recovery, share prices always lead earnings. Then, as earnings come through and in due course moderate, investors become more cautious about the outlook and valuations start to fall back. This doesn't mean share prices have to fall, but it does mean that earnings have to work very hard to keep the market's head above water. Perhaps unlikely to have a short-term market impact, but clearly the big story for investors longer term is the upcoming COP26 climate summit in Glasgow. In the run-up to next month's conference, the challenges facing policymakers are becoming clear. Here in the UK, an apparent rift between a prime minister who wants to look like a climate leader and a Treasury worrying about the cost of meeting net zero targets has emerged. It's the same story in the US, where the differing agendas of a president who wants to live up to carbon reduction pledges and senators in big coal states like West Virginia blew into the open at the weekend. The summit is already under pressure thanks to lukewarm support from big polluters like China and Russia. And finally, Bitcoin is in the headlines again this week as the price of the cryptocurrency heads back to its recent high at around $65,000. The near doubling from recent lows has crept up on investors, with the proportion of so-called crypto tourists, i.e. short-term holders newly arrived on the scene, still relatively low. That may change if, as expected, the first crypto exchange-traded funds get the green light from the US Securities and Exchange Commission this week after an 8-year battle for approval. The SEC has until tomorrow to object to the launches of two new ETFs from ProShares and Invesco. It looks like a 75-day period in which the regulator can object will expire tomorrow, with no objection having been lodged. If so, that could open up the market to a stream of similar products with the potential to bring crypto speculation to a wider audience.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.